ones, the members present are Representative Ward, Representative Furness, Representative Euling, Chairman. And today, we are going to move down the agenda. We will take up first testimony from Commissioner Dick Lyons on HB 574, an act relating to the state loan programs and providing for an effective date. And also, we will also take testimony from Kerry Elders additionally, in that he worked on the bill originally. So, Commissioner Lyons, whenever you're ready, we'll be glad to listen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll be extremely brief because I think your committee has afforded us during the interim in the department a chance to work very closely with your examination of the state's lending program, and has made our job, I'd like to say for the record, a great deal easier, because then we know when the process starts again during the second session what sorts of things we need to face, what we should have addressed. So from my own perspective as head of the department, the main thing you're going to be looking at here today that I see is a specific examination, probably lending program by lending program, about what you feel the state's posture ought to be. What we're trying to achieve in this bill is to sever the connection between the law and a specific number for interest rates. We're trying to tie the interest rates in each of these programs to the market, to the either the effective cost of money to the state of Alaska, or to the apparent value of other lost lending opportunities. So we're doing that. We try to state the cost of risk associated with the lending, try to state the cost because it costs the state money to loan this money, to put that in there, and then to deal with the question of the extent to which the state wishes to subsidize specific programs on a program-by-program basis, because I think it's very clear that some programs we're going to be moving very close to market rates. For instance, the fisheries, if somebody's buying a fisheries permit, the state is the only lender. And so we're in one place in the marketplace. Other places we're talking about programs wherein the program originates from a concern for social concerns. Perhaps we want to look at a bigger subsidy, or if we're trying to get something specific started, again, you might want to do that. So I think probably I'll keep my remarks quite brief. And thank you again for the cooperation you've given us. And I hope that what we've done has helped you in the interim. And the bill is a fairly straightforward bill. It tries to then tie the interest rates of the state's lending programs, to the extent they're in our department, to the lending, to the borrowing market.
Thank you. Then the loan programs you're speaking of are just essentially in commerce and economic development.
Yes.
how many loan programs do you have in that department right now that would fall under this umbrella?
Not all active. 11 programs, Mr. Chairman.
Now, some of those are inactive. I know in last year's legislative session, we appropriated money for maybe 5 or 6 of those programs. Mm-hmm. The balance of those programs, are they just proceeds? In other words, they haven't been funded in the past, they haven't been funded in the last legislative session, okay? So if they're inactive, what good would this actually, what kind of impact would this bill have on those?
Actually, some of them did not receive requests for appropriation because it was sufficient money in the fund to carry over its needs into the next fiscal year. The impact here will still be, even though we're not borrowing money to put into this fund, what we're doing will be to have the states, as the state addresses the need for money that should be provided, should be lent by the state for a specific purpose, would keep that floating with the actual cost of money as it goes on in the marketplace, and would make it so the legislature addressed the issue of the cost of funds, the risk associated, the amount of subsidy necessary, and then let the market, the lending rate, float with the actual market. So you then would, you've defined the issues. You wouldn't, for instance, if you started a program 20 years ago, we'll say, then an 8% rate would look pretty horrible, and a 3% rate would look attractive. Whereas today, you know, 8% money looks pretty good. So what this would do is allow the state's lending function to float with the cost of funds.
Even on the inactive accounts, then, as far as appropriations are concerned?
Right. I think in the fullness of time, we'll have to...
What? Yeah, they're loan assumptions.
Yeah, these are loan assumptions.
Would you say you have a significant amount of loan assumptions in your portfolio at this time?
I think I'd probably better let Paul Arnold address that specifically.
Representative Ward, do you have questions?
No, is the 11th loan tourism? Or I've got a list here of 10 on it.
Veterans.
Veterans is on there. Maybe I'm the...
You said it's a 10 loan program. I said 9 and you said 11. I think Representative Ward's mathematics are correct. You are right. But that's right, there was and there is no longer, you're quite right.
That's the one I had.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ward.
Terry?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Terry Elder, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. I'd like to elaborate a little bit further on House Bill 574. As the Commissioner indicated, the basic thrust of it is to allow the loan rates and loan programs to move with the market and to explicitly identify certain policy variables, so that we, rather than just take a statutory fixed rate that we currently have in our programs of 7% or 9.5% or 10%, whatever it is, we take a base rate and tie that to the market. And the market rate that we tie that to are the U.S. Treasury rates. To that base rate, and that's what moves generally the whole formula with the market over time. To that base rate, we add an adjustment for risk, because clearly the borrowers aren't of the same credit stature as the U.S. Treasury. Also, we add an adjustment for administrative fee, and there the concept is that a subsidy, if it exists in a program, is a direct benefit to the borrower, and consequently we think it's only fair that the borrower support the administrative cost of maintaining a program. And finally, we subtract a subsidy from that the state may want to provide to stimulate a particular activity. The percents that we've attached to those rates, we put for the risk adjustment 125 basis points. Where we get that is that's roughly that's a little bit more now than what Alaska Housing Finance pays. Alaska Housing Finance paid 93 basis points over Treasuries during 1983. They paid about 166 basis points over Treasuries in the last half of 1982. Ginnie Mae's, which are also mortgage-backed securities, right now are selling at about 145 basis points over Treasuries. So the 125 is roughly between HFC and the Ginnie Mae rate relative to the Treasury rate, and we think it's still a good deal for individual borrowers when they can borrow essentially at the rate that a AA corporation can borrow at. The 75 basis points for the administrative fee is roughly twice what the servicing fee is right now for private servicers of mortgages. However, private servicers of mortgages earn more funds on the origination of a loan and also on the escrow earnings that we don't earn, and therefore we think something higher than the rate is justified. And then finally, we subtract a subsidy of 300 basis points, which we have used because that's the maximum subsidy which is currently allowable under Alaska Housing Finance. So the formula is the base rate plus 125 plus 75 minus 300, or the net is the Treasury rate minus 1. And we think that that formula is important. Reasonable people can disagree on the actual numbers that should be utilized in any one of those policy elements, and that's fine. But at least this way it identifies the policy elements. And when the legislature wants to change the subsidy up or down, or change the risk adjustment up or down, or the administrative cost up or down, it can do so specifically within the formula without worrying about the base rate itself, because that's going to move with the market. Just to give you some examples of what market movements can do to create a benefit or a penalty, when the Ag Revolving Loan Fund was begun in 1953, the statutory fixed rate was 4.5%. And at that time, treasuries, medium-term treasuries, were yielding 3%. Obviously, that spread is quite reversed in the ensuing 30 years. In 1979 and 1980, a number of statutory changes were made in Commerce's direct loan programs to essentially raise the interest rates to the 9.5% level in small business, tourism, commercial fishing, and fisheries enhancement programs. But at that time, medium-term treasuries were averaging 8.9%, so that the 9.5 was only was 60 basis points above the average for treasuries at that time. Now, obviously, treasuries have moved up, and the 9.5% has stayed the same, creating a benefit out of what was a penalty. I'm not arguing for a benefit or a penalty. I'm simply saying that let's not have the market create one when the legislature may intend something else. And we can do that with a formula approach by tying the base rate to treasuries. The reason we pick treasuries as the base rate is that that's the standard by which most credits are compared. For example, in the credit markets, usually when something is priced, it's priced relative to the treasury yield curve. So that's why they'll say that HFTs came at 86 basis points above the treasuries, or Ginnie Mae's came 145 basis points above treasuries. Treasuries is the base rate, so to speak, of the credit markets. Treasuries are something that the general fund would have, most likely would have purchased, had the funds not been appropriated for some use, in this case, the loan funds. And consequently, the treasury rate represents a reasonable alternative cost of funds to use in any formula. And finally, the treasury yield curve stretches between 6 months and 30 years, and consequently we can relate a specific loan program, which is, let's say, a 10-year loan program or a 20-year loan program, to a 10-year rate or a 20-year rate, as opposed to a fixed interest rate, statutorily fixed interest rate, which doesn't adjust for whether it's a 5-year loan, a 1-year loan, or a 20-year loan. The other major impact of the of this bill would be to deposit all earnings of the funds into the of the loan funds into the general fund. We would only retain the principal repayments. This would allow us to simply avoid the question of dedicated funds, which would mean that we would have to ask for appropriations to cover the lending amount, but essentially it would be a wash item because we would be paying money into the general fund and asking for it back. But it would allow us to do two things. One, avoid the dedicated fund issue, and number two, it would allow for increased legislative oversight, which is fine with us. And that's the two major impacts, I think, of the bill. The sectional analysis that we provided the committee, I don't know if you've had a chance to really look at it, but there's a couple of the last two pages, I think, are very helpful for you to take a look at. The very last page shows the Treasury yield curve and what the rates would be using the formula of House Bill 574 for a 1 year at 9.08 out to a 30-year at 10.74. That would be the current loan rate under this bill. And the page just in front of that shows each of the loan programs and what the present interest rate is and what the interest rate would be under this bill. And as you can see, in quite a few cases, there's a very nominal change of 10.5 to 10.7. In a couple of cases, in the historical district, for example, in child care, there's larger because there are 7 and 7.5%. That's my prepared testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
Yeah, I guess the question I would have would be, given the amount that, let's say that someone comes in, a loan is originated, you pick up on whatever the U.S. Treasury rate is at the time. Is that a fluctuating rate that changes with the actual loan? Does it float, or does it actually stay stable at the amount when that transaction and that loan is closed?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the loan, when it is made, will be a fixed rate loan for the term of the loan, if it's a 10-year, 5-year, 15, whatever. But the interest rate in February may be different from the interest rate in March because, of course, the base rate does fluctuate. And what we choose, what we propose to do in 574 is to use a 6-month moving average in order to smooth out the fluctuations that you would otherwise see in the monthly rates. But the rate, the loan itself is not a variable rate loan, it's a fixed rate loan.
Okay, explain the base rate again.
Okay, the base rate is the U.S. Treasury yield curve. Mm-hmm. This would include Treasury bills and bonds and notes maturing between 3 months and 30 years. And and it's a rate that everyone can follow because it's published by the Federal Reserve. We get it in Federal Reserve Bulletin 58, or remember the number of that? It's in the sectional someplace. Let's see. I think it's in the sectional someplace where we get it. But anyway, it's a Federal Reserve. Here it is. We took out the number. It's a publication they call Selected Interest Rates, and we can get you the number. We took it out of the final version. But it's a regular publication that they put out where they list what the interest rates are from 3 months to 30 years.
Okay, now which particular one of those rates in that? Would you take an average on that, or would you just take...
Literally will tell you what the one-year rate is and the 5 and the 10, et cetera, if we're making a 5-year loan, we'd look at the 5-year rate and use that as the base. Then plus 125, plus 75, minus 300. If we're making a 15-year loan, we'd do likewise. If we're making, say, a 13-year loan, we'd simply interpolate between the 10 and the 15 for the 13-year rate.
That base wouldn't essentially change at any time in the future, then, would it? As long as
once a loan is closed,
right?
That it doesn't matter to that borrower what interest rate, whether interest rates go up or down. It's a fixed rate loan for the borrower.
So what you would be doing is you would be taking a base rate off of, you'd be taking your base rate from your U.S. Treasury yield. So you'd have an actual booklet on it which would state, okay, for 5 years the average has been such and such.
That's good.
Is that a 5-year average over a 5-year life? U.S. Treasury bills, or
what it is, it's the interest rate of constant maturities. It's published by the Federal Reserve, so they tell us what the interest rate is, and it's as I said, it's a publicly available document. So it's just a matter of taking a look at that and averaging it out for the, they tell you what the monthly average is, and so you simply use that. And we're proposing to use the 6-month moving average to smooth out the monthly fluctuations, and that would be it. So it'd be something that anybody could look at.
Representative Furness, do you have a question? Representative Copeland?
Sorry.
Question, I guess, under the bulk fuel revolving loan program that we have here, which is listed on the second to the last page, why would that particular interest rate be 9.08% versus present interest rate of 10? Both the residential energy conservation loan program and the bulk fuel loan program.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman,
just occurred January 1st. Those two programs moved to a market rate, so to speak. It was the interest rate charged on that is tied to the municipal bond rates, and which are currently at 10.03. Now, the fact that bulk fuel is 9.08 under HB 574 and residential energy is 10.28 reflects that one is a 1-year loan based on the one-year base rate, and the other is a five-year loan based on the five-year base rate. That's one of the that's the strength of using a Treasury yield curve is you can specifically relate the loan the maturity of the loan to the cost of funds for that maturity.
So in other words, all both of the residential energy conservation loan program and bulk fuel would be included under this fluctuating rate included in the bill. So
that's correct, and in fact they already are fluctuating.
But on a different level.
It'd just be at a using a different base rate.
With using a different base rate. Yes,
So essentially under this proposal, the state loans will be operating as if they were commercial loans in many ways. If we decide for reasons of policy that we wish to subsidize one sector or another more than this, how would we handle that? I mean, would we be buying a percentage of a loan by putting money into the budget or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Covenant, what the bill would do would be to separate the policy elements between the base rate, risk adjustment, and administrative fee, and the subsidy. If, for example, and we're just proposing to in this case to use the subsidy that's used in Alaska Housing Finance at 300 basis points. If the legislature wanted to subsidize, let's say, child care facilities more than 300 basis points, it could do so by simply changing the 300 to a 400 or a 500, whatever you really decide.
And or less, or they could.
Or less, or whatever. And the point is that everyone would be talking about the same thing. They'd be talking about the subsidy for child care and be identified as opposed to the administrative costs or the risk adjustment or the base rate itself. They'd be talking about the subsidy. And that's a much more efficient way of doing it than simply arguing over 7% versus 8%, let's say.
Thank you. So that would be based on the 300 basis points you were talking about. That would be the actual subsidy?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. That 300 basis points would be the actual subsidy. And as I say, in that case, in case of child care, since that's one of our lower interest rate programs at 7%, that would have the largest impact of House Bill 574 would be on that particular program. The others are fairly minimal changes. So therefore, for example, if the legislature wished to have a larger subsidy on that particular program, you certainly do so within the context of the formula.
Just because it was set at one of the lowest rates.
Yeah, just as because it was set at a low rate. But I would hope the debate would ensue would be based on what kind of benefits you would expect or some social purpose for it, as opposed to the fact that it just started off lower and didn't get changed in 1980. Mm-hmm. Although actually it did get changed in 1980. I believe it was 6% and it moved to 7%.
Is that the only change that you can recall where these have actually changed in the last couple of years?
Mr. Chairman, I
the only one I can think of is the ag revolving loan fund.
Well, the ag revolving loan fund was changed. We had, Mr. Chairman, in 1979, small business, tourism, and fisheries enhancement went from 8 to 9.5. Commercial fishing went from 7 to 9.5. The historical district went from 6.5 to 7.5, and child care went from 6 to 7. So they were pretty much all changed about 4 years ago. The mining loan fund was created in 1981 with a 10% rate. That was a very volatile year. Rates ranged from 9.8 to 14.3 and averaged 12.6. So what we've generally found in just looking at the loan programs, quite often the interest rate that's initially set relative to market rates is very much different, a few years down the road. And it can either and it just so happens that market rates have gone up, and therefore it's usually been created a subsidy or been a benefit to the borrower. And what we're simply proposing is that not occur in the future, that a benefit or a penalty be a policy choice between the legislature and the executive branch, and not an accident.
Questions? What do you feel that your cost savings would be? You've thrown a few rates around here. We see that there's a difference of maybe a point or two in regard to what the actual standard rate is on the interest rate and what the would be under your program. Do you have any idea of what the savings would be to the state on a fiscal year basis? Just off your top of your head. Probably pretty hard to pin it down.
Well,
to
it's
the penny, but
yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's pretty hard. Although,
yes, we got a fiscal.
Yeah, that's the fiscal note that's been prepared by Maggie Hanley of Accounting and Collections indicated that in fiscal 85, of course, we wouldn't be talking about much added revenue, but in fiscal 86, it would be $492,900 in added revenue, and going up a little bit from there to fiscal 89, about $1.1 million. So it'd be added revenue as a result of the higher interest rates. Now, to the extent, one thing that you can never be sure of is to the extent that what you're doing is eliminating a surprise subsidy. You know, you're eliminating the chance that that interest market rates will go to 20% next year, and everyone will clamor at the door to borrow money at what will all of a sudden be very, very cheap. You're eliminating that, and that may have some effect to slow what I would consider an abnormal growth of the loan program.
So what you would predict then, given we had a gradual rise in interest rates that might occur in the next couple of years, then in essence, the people that would be clamoring to particularly get these loans set up, the demand would slow on those loans, and therefore it would loosen up a lesser amount as far as appropriations from the legislature.
That's possible, Mr.
So you actually might have money that could lapse or that essentially could be extra money at the end of each fiscal year based on the fact that interest rates went up abnormally high or something like that.
That's possible, Mr. Chairman. We'd have to look at it at the time. As I said, one of the strengths of this is that we would be looking program by program to appropriate funds as needed. And consequently, I'm sure that if market rates went to 20%, that there'd be a lot less funds needed than the following year. Although I don't anticipate that, but it's possible.
Any questions? Maybe one last question. Are there any programs in here that you feel should be repealed from the statutes?
Mr. Chairman, no, we aren't recommending repeal of any programs. There are
a couple of them that aren't going to be funded, so that's...
Well, the ones that aren't, they're only, most of them we're not asking for any additional funds in fiscal 85 currently because the balance in the fund and the cash flow will be sufficient in our estimation to cover demands. The Veterans Revolving Loan Fund currently is inactive and we're only making assumptions.
Sure.
There, but we're not recommending repeal of any programs.
Okay. Any other further questions? Thank you very much, Terry. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else here to testify in HB 574? Okay, we're going to move back up then, and we're going to take up HB 536 at this time. I believe members have the committee substitute, which we've had drafted. I would like you to take a look at it. And Terry, did you want to come forward and speak on the committee substitute, which the Loans Committee has prepared in regard to the testimony that occurred last week on 536, please?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding the sections that have been carried forward in the committee substitute are essentially the sections that relate to the Department of Commerce, and those are unchanged from the previous testimony of Maggie Hanley, the Director of Accounting and Collections. Consequently, we continue to support what is now the the bill and what was previously that a part of the bill, and we think it's a good idea. Essentially, what it's doing is taking the defunct loan programs, or the programs that we have no statutory authority to make new loans, regularly reappropriating the cash flow, and I think that's quite appropriate. It's just leaving behind on every July 1st $200,000, which would be used for expenses relating to foreclosure if they're needed. And the only reason that we even need to do that is because there are some timing. There may be some timing problems of the cash flow into the fund related to when we would need it for a foreclosure action. And since that lapses at the end of the year, if we find we don't need it, then the general fund gets it back anyway. So we continue to support that.
Any questions for Mr. Elder at this time? Thank you. Is there anybody else here to testify on this portion of the bill? Committee substitute? Thank you. Any questions? I'll entertain a motion to pass the bill off to Finance Committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
I would move passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 536 loans. Pass the unanimous consent.
Thank you. I will ask also if you'll make your motion to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 536 and then a second motion to
correct, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I move that we adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 536.
Is there any objection? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee supports the bill to pass from committee to the next committee referral. I believe it's finance. That is committee substitute for House Bill number 536 loans.
Thank you. Any objection? So ordered. Thank you. Appreciate everybody coming. Meeting adjourned.